May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast. Gee!
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream, you could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast. The podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith. Trust.
Well, if it isn't the Star-Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders, sprinkle some of that pixie dust around, and think up that happiest thought, and let's fly away to Neverland! I am, of course, Head Lost Boy, Jeremy, also called the Spider-Pan, and you too can have a Lost Boy nickname or a Pixie nickname because girls are too clever, they don't get lost. But you can go to our website, neverlandpodcast.com, and sign up on our Neverlanders page and become an official Lost Boy or Pixie. You can also find links here, even in the show notes, for our Instagram, our YouTube, our Facebook. We're everywhere. We have a Twitter account. You can find it all there on our website, so you can come and check it out and hang with us and interact. I even have a Discord channel for you to interact with there. I'm still working on getting the Discord to be a little bit more active than it is. Mostly I've been using Discord to play some games with some friends on Friday and Saturday nights. But you can come in there, and we need to get that active. I would like to do a lot more with Discord. It would be great. But we've got a lot of show for you today, and it is just me. I'm flying solo today. Eric had a business meeting of some sort, and he had to fly, I think, to Utah. So he will be back at some point. I just don't know when. Hopefully it's going to be next week. He's just got so much stuff going on. But I am still here for you. I am here to bring you movie reviews, a little bit of Disney news, and an update on the Kitten Saga. Yes, for those of you that listened to last week's show, you know that we have rescued an abandoned kitten, which I believe has now hit that 6-week mark where she's supposed to be safe enough to where she could leave her mother. But we do have some health conditions we're dealing with. We had to leave a stool sample with the veterinarian that they wanted to check to make sure that she didn't have worms or anything. And they did find a parasite that is common among a litter of cats, where, you know, cats might step kind of in some mess. We'll just call it that. But then you know how cats will lick their paws and clean themselves. Well, then they ingest that parasite and that it'll keep cycling through their system. So that's kind of been a problem. So we're having to treat her for that. We're having to scoop out the litter box a little bit more often and make sure she doesn't step on anything. Make sure she doesn't re-ingest. So she's in the middle of treatment for that. Actually, I guess she's completed that treatment, but we're still having to crush some pills for the cat herpes to try to fight off any inflammation that might still be going on. Although she looks a lot better. The conjunctivitis is completely gone. She's gotten frisky and fun. I did post some video to the Instagram account, which is kind of my personal Instagram account, but it's under the name of the Spider Pan. And you can see that we brought her out to the couch, and she was all playful and frisky and doing a lot of kitten things of trying to be like, I'm big, look at me, and arch to the back, that kind of thing. And they walk sideways and stuff. So she's starting to act like a normal, healthy kitten. So I think we're waiting to try to get more introduction going after she's 100%, because we're still, you know, giving her a little bit of these pills in her food. Which, on another front on that, we are starting to give her a bit more of a solid kitten food instead of just the milk. Which we have learned, and part of the reason that she might have been having some the diarrhea issues is the milk product that we were giving her before actually had skim milk in it. Cats are lactose intolerant. It is a myth that cats are supposed to be, oh, give them milk. No, that is extremely unhealthy for a cat. And to have, I think it was Hearts was the who put out this stuff. It had skim milk in it, and it was actually causing diarrhea. We found a powder formula, and we've been giving her that. And, you know, we mix in some regular food, and now she's got solid stools. There's no way or other around saying it. I'm sorry. But she's, you know, so she's, everything's healthier. And she's making it to the litter box all the time now. So she's doing fine. But she is getting kind of frisky and hard to handle. I tried to put a baby gate, you know, or safety gate up to try to keep her in the bathroom because she can't really come out yet on her own. We're kind of being careful about that because of the adult cat. Plus, we want to make sure she's perfectly healthy before we allow too much interaction. The baby gate didn't really work out. So I took that back to Target, and they were unloading a truck, and I got a cardboard box, and I flattened it out, and I've put it up there, pinned it up against the wall, and now we have to climb in and out of the bathroom every time we want to go in there, but we're keeping the kitten in there. The only thing that's the struggle is, I mentioned last week, we have one room that's the two sinks to the bathroom, and then there's another doorway that goes in where the toilet and the shower and bathtub is. And the kitten keeps wanting to come into the toilet area, and mainly when we're trying to leave it, she wants to go running in there, and we don't want to just leave her in there. So we try to, you know, get her and put her back out into the main area, and she's getting where she's fast. Other things that have been happening is when I did have the baby gate up and the adult cat was able to come around and see the kitten, we did have some more hissing going on. We've also had, you know, we've let the kitten come and play on the couch. The adult cat will come up and sniff and sniff and sniff and then hiss. The only nice interaction I guess we had is one time when the kitten got loose from the bathroom before I had gotten the cardboard in place. She took off down across the living room and ran right past the adult cat who just watched her go by, didn't hiss at her. So there's potential that this is eventually going to work out. I did talk to some people that have told me that it can take up to 6 months to get your cats to get along, but we are letting the kitten kind of run around. I even had a day that I let the kitten run around the living room, explore it in the kitchen, and kind of get her scent around. And once we put the kitten back into the bathroom, the adult cat came down from her perch and sniffed around everywhere that the kitten had gone. You know, so, but that's the thing. You got to mix the smell in a little bit and get the cat comfortable with the idea that, okay, there's another cat around here. And we were hoping the fact that one of them was a kitten would get into the mother instincts of our adult cat. That hasn't worked because she's not her kitten. So that is the update on the kitten saga. It's still going on, and I am trying to post some photos and occasional video of this for anyone interested, or if you happen to like cats. If you don't like cats, you're been completely bored through the last, 3 minutes of this show. But it is time to move on. I've got some movies to review, and you know what? Donald Duck has turned to 85. So the first topic I'm going to turn to is going to be that. But first, a few quick news updates.
Spider-Man.
spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
So the first thing that I want to get into, and I've had this posted to our Facebook page for a very long time, but I haven't said anything about it. The Muppet movie, the old classic, is coming back to theaters. This is going to be an event through Fathom Events. Of course, the Jim Henson Company is involved, and Universal Pictures, who did release the film originally, and there are people who have been wondering, but I thought Disney owned all the rights to the Muppets. And yeah, well, they own the rights to the Muppets with anything that they've made new, but Universal still had the release rights of the film, sort of like when they acquired Lucasfilm. 21st Century Fox, or 20th Century Fox, still had the release rights to Star Wars films, of at least anything that had already previously been made, and they had the release rights to the new films, like The Force Awakens didn't have the 20th Century Fox logo on it. But of course now that's resolved, they own the company, so I still hope to see the original versions of the original films come out on Blu-ray, digital, that kind of thing. Well, I'm hoping so, but that's how that works. Universal still owns the rights to the film, so they're the ones involved in this. But July 25th and July 30th, 12:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. your local time, about 700 movie theaters nationwide are going to be showing this, The Muppet Movie, on a big screen, which I've never gotten to see it on a big screen, so I'm actually pretty excited. I definitely want to go and check this out on a big screen, just because I didn't get to. So, that is my plan, all right? Now, some other interesting things that were going on is the Disneyland Forever fireworks has returned out to the Disneyland parks. So this was something they debuted during the 60th anniversary and the Diamond Celebration. It's got pyrotechnics, it's got projections, and all kinds of stuff. I mean, there's photos on the Disney Parks blog that even show to remind you of how they projected stuff along Main Street, all along the buildings, and it's just a fantastic thing. But it is back. It might be for a limited time. So basically, if you're going to Disneyland, you might want to make sure you hurry and get there and check it out before it's gone. Some other interesting things going on. The Disney Cruise Line has celebrated World Oceans Day, which is actually was on Saturday. And so they're talking about some of the different things that they're trying to help restore the coral reefs through some of the programs with the Disney Cruise Line. Disney has been, you know, putting a lot of money into a lot of environmental type of things and conservation and stuff like that. I'm sure Walt would be quite pleased with this. But they have been working on this with the Disney Conservation Fund. And it's a multi-year project rehabilitating the coral reefs in the Bahamas. So that's pretty cool that they've been working on that. And there's some video on the Disney Parks blog. But they've provided over $13 million to marine conservation programs expanding across the oceans. I mean, around the world, around the globe, with more than 70 grants to help protect the coral reefs. So that's actually pretty cool. Now there's a new show going on at Disney's California Adventure Park called Tale of the Lion King, and this is a new outdoor musical production, brand new, and it's just debuted this past week, and it leads a troupe of 18 performers that are basically storytellers, and they're telling the Pride Land story, and it's a bit of an adaptation of the Lion King story. And of course, this is right in time for the quote-unquote live-action version of the Lion King to come out very soon. But I believe what's coming next on the slate isn't next weekend Toy Story 4, which there have been some early reviews of Toy Story 4. I don't know where they screened this, but some reviews have been popping up online, and they're generally pretty favorable. So that's encouraging, because my wife is not really down with it yet. She's kind of iffy about going. Personally, I'm interested. I want to go. I want to see what they've done. I do love this Toy Story franchise. Maybe it should have ended at 3, but people are saying that, oh, this has a great emotional ending, which is pretty much what we already knew, because Tim Allen's even said that it has a very emotional ending. I have my suspicions of what that emotional ending may be, because it almost seems like part of the trailers is like wooing Woody away from being the typical toy life to go and live a free life with Bo Peep or something, which, to me, it sort of contradicts the theme of the last few movies, especially the second one, that a toy is only really, when he's being loved by a child, he's only really alive, and not being out on display. Of course, this wouldn't be out on display. This would be out roaming free, apparently. So I'm not sure where they're going with this, but they've been talking about that. Other news that I want to get into is E3, of course, has been going on this week. That is the Electronic Entertainment Expo. And the only thing I really was worried about was Star Wars Fallen Jedi. I'm sure there's some other things maybe popped around that I'd be interested in. But I want to talk about this gameplay trailer that EA showed. And you can find this online. And basically, my first thought was, this reminds me a lot of the Force Unleashed games, which is not a bad thing. But that's what the gameplay seems similar to. You do have some interesting variety in some of the Force powers. There seems to be a stasis. I did find it interesting that although if you played the Super Nintendo Star Wars games, like from Empire Strikes Back, you could heal yourself with the Force. That apparently is not an ability you have, but you can call upon your little droid to give you something to heal yourself with if you take some damage. But a lot of it, I think you could be a little bit sneaky, a little stealthy at times with this. Definitely action-oriented. You can get clever with the ways that you defeat stormtroopers with the Force. And there are bits where you're going to have to kind of duel a little bit. They showed a couple of, purge troopers. Would that be the accurate term? But the people going trying to wipe out the Jedi. And you have to fight a couple of them that, you know, at least in the demo that we saw, we only saw one area. And in this demo, you're actually working with Saw Gerrera, which is very, very cool. I couldn't tell who they got to voice Saw Gerrera, if it was the actor from Rogue One, and I cannot think of his name all of a sudden, or if it might have been the actor who voiced him in the Clone Wars or in Rebels. I couldn't tell, but it's very, very cool. You know, you're getting involved with Saw Gerrera and his early resistance to the Empire. So that's only one little bit we know about the storyline, other than trying to maybe rebuild the Jedi. But you've got a lot of different Force powers I saw displayed in this demo, and I'm excited. It looks very, very cool. So we at least will say that much. But that's pretty much all I really wanted to get into with some of the news today. But I do want to dedicate some time to our favorite duck.
Who's got the sweetest disposition? One guess, guess who? Who never, never starts an argument? Who never shows a bit of temperament? Who's never wrong but always right? Who never dreams of starting a fight? Who gets stuck with all the bad luck? No one but Donald Duck.
Now, Donald Duck first appeared June 9th, 1934, in a silly symphony cartoon called The Wise Little Hen. So he wasn't even the main star. But this was actually based on the old fairy tale, The Little Red Hen. And this was the debut, of course, of Donald Duck. And he's dancing to a sailor's hornpipe. Donald and his friend Peter Pig try to avoid work by faking stomach aches until Mrs. Hen teaches them otherwise. Then he, of course, appeared in Orphan's Benefit, which was remade later, like 1941, and they added color to it. I don't know if it was fully remade or they just went and did a Technicolor treatment to it. It says remade in Technicolor when I was looking on it, but Orphan's Benefit, I believe that's the one that has all the miniature Mickeys, you know, the little mice. Then, of course, he had an appearance in The Dog Napper, which was November 17th, 1934. And then the appearance that I always think of for him as beginnings, The Band Concert, where he comes out and pesters Mickey Mouse by playing Turkey in the Straw. And I'm always going to, you know, think of that as being it's not his first appearance, but that's like the earliest I know him from. Of course, I don't think that was the first Donald Duck cartoon that I saw, but that is like the only, I don't think I've seen the black and white Orphan's Benefit or even The Wise Little Hen, which was in color because it was a silly symphony. You've got a lot of appearances during the 30s. There's like four different appearances in 1935, and then 7 appearances in 1936, and it just keeps going up. And some of them, of course, Mickey's Polo Team, The Orphan's Picnic. Let's see, Moving Day. Moving Day is a great one. If you've never seen that one, that is Mickey, Donald, and Goofy being forced out of their home by Pete, and they have to move all their junk out, and that's a lot of fun. And that's where you start to see Donald in the form we see him now. I mean, he hasn't really changed much over the years, but you see those early appearances. He's a little bit different, more streamlined, and then when they modernize him, he's a little bit more, I don't know, feathery looking. And then he pops up in Alpine Climbers. A lot of these, he pops up in Mickey Mouse cartoons. That's what they call them, is Mickey Mouse cartoons. Don Donald is another great one from 1937. Magician Mickey, that is a classic one in 1937 where he tries to heckle Mickey Mouse, who's doing all these card tricks. And at one point, even Mickey makes cards come out of Donald's mouth as he's throwing a tantrum. The Moose Hunters is 1937. Hawaiian Holiday. The Clock Cleaners. And then another great one, Donald's Ostrich. Donald's Ostrich, that's where Donald, he's like working as like a porter, I believe, at a train station, and somebody packs an ostrich, and he's got to deal with it, trying to get it back into its case. But also in 1937, you see Donald Duck appearing in Lonesome Ghosts. I don't think I have to say a whole lot about that one. I'm sure you're very familiar with it. Now, I'm not mentioning every single Donald Duck cartoon. I'm just kind of hitting a few highlights and some ones that I remember. There's Self Control in 1938. The Boat Builders, that was actually released on a Mickey Mouse collection here very recently. So simple, even a child can do it. Yes. Donald's Nephews, this is the first appearance, April 15th, 1938, of Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Then also 1938, another one of my favorites, Mickey's Trailer, also finds Donald Duck on board. Moving along, I think a lot of the other ones in 1938, I don't remember if I've seen them. Some of these, I used to remember watching, did you ever watch the old classic Disney Channel? If you're around my age, you'd probably remember it when you had to pay for it separately, and they had a show called Donald Duck Presents. Now, Donald Duck Presents, I don't remember that they would show even the titles of cartoons, but when you're a kid, you didn't even pay attention to the titles of Looney Tunes or anything. So some of these you only remember basically from, you know, you'd see it, you'd know it, but you wouldn't necessarily know the title of the one. Although some of these you would remember, like 1940s, Donald's Dog Laundry, where he's made this weird, goofy machine, and he's trying to give Pluto a bath and a bunch of, you know, trying to conveyor belt a bunch of dogs through a lot of different things to clean them. He also appears in Tugboat Mickey. There's another good one. Oh, and then Mr. Duck Steps Out, June 7th, 1940, the first appearance of Daisy Duck. So Daisy Duck is actually celebrating her birthday this past week as well. That would have been Friday. So that's very cool. So from 1940 to now, that'd be, no, I don't want to add it up, like 70-something years, I believe. No, probably more than that. I'm sorry, I'm not good at math, and I'm just trying to go through it. Let's see, moving along, 1941, Truant Officer Donald. I think I do recall that one. Then this is also where Orphan's Benefit is re-released in color. Old Mac Donald Duck, Donald's Camera. No, Donald's Camera is a great one. 1942, going through this list, there's Mickey's Birthday Party. That's a fun one. Donald's Snow Fight, though, is in 1942. That is a great one with him, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and gets into a snowball fight with them. It's a lot of fun. I think that's even the one where they have the hockey game in there as well. There's a lot of the ones in wintertime with Donald that are a lot of fun. This is also where you get Donald Gets Drafted, which was on May 1st, 1942. That was almost a propaganda piece in a way. That's a really fun one. But definitely a propaganda one is Der Fuhrer's Face, January 1st, 1943. And this one won an Oscar. Donald Duck actually was in a lot of these where they were kind of making fun of Nazis, especially this one, DeFuhrer's Face. There's even a song, Spike Jonze has redone that song. If you don't know who Spike Jonze is, definitely Google him. He does a lot of good funny stuff and used a lot of funny instrumentation in his songs. He would take a song. He was Weird Al before Weird Al was Weird Al, you know? Except for he would use the lyrics, the original lyrics to a song, but he would cornball them a little bit and make them funny and add extra sound effects and, you know, maybe do a literal interpretation of some of the lyrics and add a few extra things. Just funny. He would put all these things together with his group. A lot of fun stuff. But anyway, so Spike Jonze did DeFuhrer's Face as well. But he did a lot of World War II propaganda films. And then, of course, in 1943 is also you have some segments from Saludos Amigos with Donald. My goodness, there are a lot of different things. 1944, Donald Duck and the Gorilla. That's a great one. If you haven't seen that one, that is where this is where people were really terrified of gorillas. And they have a gorilla that escapes from the zoo, and the nephews decide to prank Donald to make him think that the gorilla's gotten loose and they're wearing this gorilla suit. And, of course, the real gorilla does show up, and after Donald is wise to his nephews playing the trick on him, he goes after and tries to rip the costume off of, whoops, the real gorilla. This is also, it's supposed to be like a scary one, but it's just fun. You also have Commando Duck in 1944, another one of the propaganda ones. The Three Caballeros comes out in 1945. Duck Pimples, that one sounds familiar. There's so many different things. 1946, you even have some more. 1947, lots of years. But here's kind of the thing. Mickey and the Beanstalk, by the way, 1947. Blame It on the Samba, part of Melody Time in 1948. Lots of things. I'm going through a list, basically, of all these different ones. But they all come to a stop around, let's see, we're still going on through the 50s. They kind of stopped around the 1960s, and we had like 10 years of nothing. And then suddenly, 1980s, we get Mickey's Christmas Carol and also an appearance in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's two appearances in the 80s. And of course, the 1990s, The Prince and the Pauper, a Goofy movie, and also that Noah's Ark segment of Fantasia 2000. And of course, now appearing in Mickey's PhilharMagic. Oh, but one thing I definitely do not want to miss out on, 1959, Donald and Math Magic Land. I remember watching that in school frequently. So much fun. Oh, and 1955 is even when you have, I'm going backwards a little bit, No Hunting and Barely Asleep, BZ Bear. These are where Donald is playing the, sometimes he's like a hunter. I think there was one time he was had a little lodge and a bear kept trying to get into get warm. But I think Donald even plays the park ranger trying to deal with some of the bears. And they introduced that Humphrey the Bear at that time. But, I mean, there's been so many great Donald Duck cartoons. And so now he's been around 85 years, if you can believe it. My goodness. So a salute to Donald Duck. Happy birthday to our favorite duck.
This is your Neverland story time. You can listen along with your MP3 device. You will know it is time to listen when you hear the chime like this. Let's begin now.
This is a Disneyland original little long playing record, and I am your story reader. I am going to begin now to read the story of Mickey and the Beanstalk. You can read along with me in your book. You will know it is time to turn the page when Tinkerbell rings her little bells like this. Let's begin now. Happy Valley is an enchanted land. Everyone who lives there, including Mickey, Donald, and Goofy, are held under a wonderful spell cast by the singing harp. The golden harp lives in a castle in the mountains, just above the valley. She has a beautiful singing voice. One day, a mysterious shadow crept over the valley, and something dreadful happened. When the shadow lifted, the golden harp was gone. The valley was no longer a happy place. The crops died, and the cows stopped giving milk. All of the families were hungry, including Mickey, Donald and Goofy. It was decided that Mickey would take their cow into town and exchange her for some food. Mickey, however, exchanged the cow for some magic beans and brought them home to Donald and Goofy. Donald became so angry, he threw the beans across the room, and one bean fell through a crack in the floor. That night, as the boys slept, a strange thing happened. A vine began to grow from the bean that had fallen through the floor. It grew very quickly, and as it grew, it lifted the tiny house into the air. All night long, the beanstalk grew, lifting Mickey, Donald, and Goofy higher and higher. When they woke up in the morning, they were in a land above the clouds. Directly in front of them stood a giant castle. They knocked on the massive door, but no one answered. So they crawled under and found themselves in a grand hall. Goofy made an exciting discovery. Food! They were about to eat when a gentle voice asked, "Who's there? Who's out there?"
"Look, it's the singing harp," cried Mickey. "She's locked in that cage."
"How did you get here?" asked Goofy.
"The wicked giant kidnapped me," said the harp. "He's very big and very nasty. Quick, hide, here he comes." Mickey, Donald and Goofy hid behind some dishes on the table. The giant went to the table to eat and found the hiding trio. He caught all three and put them into the cage with the magic harp. Mickey, however, was just able to slip out of the cage before the giant closed the gate. They decided the best way to escape would be to have the harp sing the giant to sleep. So she sang a lullaby, and in no time the giant was snoring. Mickey carefully lowered himself into the giant's pocket, got the key, and climbed back out. He crawled up the giant's shirt, onto the table, and released his friends from the cage. Donald, Goofy, and the harp started to run towards the castle gate, but Mickey decided to tie the giant's shoelaces together, just in case he tried to chase them. In doing so, Mickey woke the giant, and the chase began. Donald, Goofy, and the harp got to the beanstalk and were on their way down. But Mickey was really in trouble. The giant swung a club and barely missed Mickey, who was running as fast as he could towards the beanstalk. Mickey managed to get to the stalk ahead of the giant and quickly began to climb down. Donald and Goofy, now on the ground, began to chop down the beanstalk. "Hurry," they called to Mickey. "The stalk's beginning to fall."
"Here I am," said Mickey. "Let it fall."
There was a crash, and that was the end of the giant. The singing harp returned to her castle in the mountains, and Mickey, Donald and Goofy returned to their home in what was once again a happy valley.
My, what a happy day. Let the bells ring out, let your heart sing out. What a scrumptious day. What a very special day. Hear the music play. Songs are in the air, love is everywhere when you feel this way. You've got an invitation to join the celebration, the biggest in creation. Can't you see the world's my oyster? Why do I feel this way? 'Cause a boy I know in a moonlight glow gave the big okay, said to name the day. What a great big gorgeous sumptuous thumping bumptious hungalumptious wondrous scrumptious my, what a happy day.
Fee, fi, fo, fum. Fee, fi, fo, fum. Fee, fi, fo, fum. Hee, hi, ho, hum. I'm the most amazing guy, a most amazing guy am I. Fee, fi, fo, fum. Hee, hi, ho, hum. I'm the stuff I'm telling you, but here's what I can do. I can change myself into an elf. Fly up high like the birdies. I can disappear into atmosphere. Peek-a-boo. Cause I know the magic wordies. Fee-fi-fo-foy. Fee-fee-fee-fee. Fee-fee. I don't know no fee-fee.
Y cuiden a los pequeñitos. do not put on your flight glasses until instructed to do so by a crewman. Now, I remind you that photography is not a Star Tours flight. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask a Star Tours agent. You'll be boarding in just a few moments. Thank you.
All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Star Tours, 1401, you are cleared for departure.
1401? That's us. We can't take off. The captain isn't on board.
Auto takeoff sequence initiated.
Excuse me. You don't seem to understand. I am not the captain. I am C-3PO.
1401, cleared for takeoff. Contact departure on frequency 429.
Wait! Wait! R2-D2, I am not programmed to fly these things. Now just turn us around this instant before we get into trouble. I knew it!
Oh!
Don't shoot!
Prepare to be boarded, Captain.
I'm afraid there's been a terrible mistake. I am
seeing... We know you have this rebel spy on you.
I've never seen that human before.
Gotta go!
Go for the S3 flight.
No! No! Troopers, what are they doing here? I'm afraid you're not really allowed to be here. Otto, hit the brakes! It worked! Now what?
This is Admiral Akbar. By now you know that your star speeder is carrying an agent vital to our rebel cause.
The spy?
Precisely. Deliver them safely to the rendezvous point I am transmitting to your R2 unit. Good luck, and may the Force be with you.
R2-D2, what are you saying? This is madness! This can't be right.
You can run, but you can't hide. Not from me.
That dreadful bounty hunter.
Your safety restraints by pressing the release button on your left. Make sure you have all your personal belongings as you exit. Thank you for flying Star Tours. Bye-bye.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Be a movie!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody!
And me!
Boy, I wish I were you people seeing this for the first time!
Kermit, I got a great picture of the chicken!
Oh, good!
All right, I want to begin this movie review with a little bit of background on the Phoenix Saga, mainly dealing with the Dark Phoenix Saga, but I've dug up a lot of history. Some of this is something that Marvel has retconned. They'll do that. They'll go back and change something in the past to kind of give background to a story they want to tell now, and so they'll go and alter a few things, and so the histories I've found really take into account that things have been altered here and there. But 20th Century Fox, or now 21st Century Fox, just released the Dark Phoenix. And in their press kit, it says, "This is the story of one of the X-Men's most beloved characters, Jean Grey, as she evolves into the iconic Dark Phoenix. During a life-threatening rescue mission in space, Jean is hit by a cosmic force that transforms her into the most powerful mutants of all. Wrestling with this increasingly unstable power, as well as her own personal demons, Jean spirals out of control, tearing the X-Men family apart and threatening to destroy the very fabric of our planet. The film is the most intense and emotional X-Men movie ever made. It is the culmination of 20 years of X-Men movies. Holy cow, 20 years? Really? As the family of mutants that we've come to know and love must face their most devastating enemy yet, one of their own. And I will say, that is only part of this movie. There is a lot more going on than just her. There is some other characters, some other motivations that I will touch on, but I want to be very, very careful because I don't really want to spoil anything if you have not gone. And it has been receiving, the critics, of course, are not being friendly. Fans are mostly favorable. It's a little bit, it's more than 50-50. It's, more favorable than it is unfavorable. I think some people wanted a more direct adaptation of the comics story, which that was done really in the 90s very well by the 90s animated series of the X-Men. They did a great job of just adapting the story. And this one, it wants to tell the story, but they don't want to tell it the same way. But there are several nods to the comic book origins, which I'll get into later. But I want to get into and tell you a little bit about some of the character history of Jean Grey. Jean Elaine Grey, she's born the second daughter of John and Elaine Grey, had an older sister, Sarah Grey Bailey. John Grey, her father, was a professor at Bard College in upstate New York. Now, she has telepathy and telekinesis, and those are her powers as a mutant. They first manifested when her best friend was hit by a car and killed. There is a nod to this in the film. At the very beginning, we do see a car accident, so I did appreciate that. This event kind of left Jean comatose, and she's brought back to consciousness with some help from Charles Xavier. But Xavier does block her telepathy until she's old enough to be able to control it, and he knows how rough it can be to control, so he blocks it. There is a bit of a nod to that in the film as well. But she later becomes part of the X-Men known as Marvel Girl. She's the first only female member back when the X-Men first got started. And she's very strong telekinetically, and she slowly starts to get those telepathic powers that she has. This is also where she first meets Cyclops in the original issue of X-Men, and they begin a nice relationship, and I've always been a big fan of them. Cyclops and Jean Grey has always been my thing, and then Wolverine shows up and gets in the way. Because she does have a bit of an attraction, because Jean has a little bit of a dark side that some of them kind of likes that about Wolverine, but let's face it, Wolverine is a short, ugly guy. I mean, but for some reason they treat him like he's James Bond going through. And he, he's supposed to have great feelings or whatever for Jean Grey. But you look at his history in the comics and he's kind of a little bit of a womanizer, which I don't understand how that works because he's short, hairy, ugly, and grumpy. All right. So it's never made sense to me. But the Phoenix Force then suddenly showed up. This is during an emergency mission in space. The X-Men find their shuttle has been damaged. So it's the shuttle they're in that's damaged. The movie, they do have a damaged shuttle, but it's not one they're in. It's some astronauts are in that, and you've probably seen that in the trailer. Jean pilots the shuttle back to Earth, but she gets exposed to fatal levels of radiation. It's like basically like a solar flare. But she saves her friends, and she calls out for help and is answered by a cosmic entity called the Phoenix Force. The Phoenix Force is the sum of all life in the universe, and it's moved by Jean's dedication and love for her friends, basically, and takes the form of a duplicate body to house Jean's psyche. Now, the duplicate body thing came along later, when they wanted to bring Jean back from this. During the time, it was Jean and her body, but in that instant, the Phoenix Force is just overwhelmed and believes itself to be Jean Grey and places Jean's dying body in a healing cocoon. Like I said, this is stuff that's going to come up later. This is how they brought Jean back at the end of all of this. And this cocoon was later described as a phoenix egg. But anyway, so the ship crashes in Jamaica Bay. The other X-Men are fine. They're all unharmed. And the Phoenix Force, as Jean Grey emerges in a new green and gold costume and adopts the new codename Phoenix with immense cosmic powers. And meanwhile, the cocoon containing the real Jean Grey sinks to the bottom of the bay unnoticed. Phoenix continues her life as Jean Grey and the other X-Men joining them on missions and saving the universe. Now, part of Jean's consciousness is in the body. I mean, Jean is still there. And that's going to come up later. And Phoenix is still in the body. This is how it does in the comics, not in the film. It's the film's similar, but so during the Dark Phoenix saga, now the Phoenix becomes overwhelmed and corrupted by her first taste of evil and transforms into a force of total destruction called Dark Phoenix. inadvertently killing the inhabitants of a planetary system. After consuming its star and jeopardizing the entire universe, however, Jean's personality manages to take control and Phoenix commits suicide to ensure the universe's safety. Now, I want to get a little bit more detail of that, but Marvel put out a, they call them TLDR, and I'll never remember what TLDR means, but they have a retelling of the story, so let me just switch over to them and let you hear the audio of the video they have out on YouTube. Now, here's where it gets a little complicated. So upon, of course, its suicide of a disintegration ray that's on the dark side of the moon where they're fighting with the Imperial Guard there of the Shi'ar Empire, the Phoenix Force disperses into its original form, and a fragment locates the still-healing Jean at the bottom of Jamaica Bay. In trying to bond with her, Jean senses its memories of death and destruction as Dark Phoenix, and she rejects it, causing it to bond with animate a lifeless clone of Jean Grey created by the villain Mr. Sinister. Some of you might remember him from the 90s cartoon. They did allude to Mr. Sinister at an end credit scene, I believe in X-Men Apocalypse. They did allude to him at the very end, but I don't think that's ever going to happen unless the Marvel Cinematic Universe picks up and decides to use Mr. Sinister at some time. But he does a lot of genetic manipulation, and he's very obsessed with Cyclops and Jean Grey and their genetic code. So Sinister created the clone to mate with Cyclops to create genetically superior mutants. Named Madeline Pryor, the unaware clone meets Cyclops in a situation engineered by Sinister, and the two fall in love, marry, and have a child, Nathan Christopher Summers. For most of you, you might know him as Cable. Some of you didn't know that that was Cable, but that's Cable. He appeared in the second Deadpool movie. Meanwhile, you know, the funny thing is, though, he was played by Thanos himself, Josh Brolin. That's fun. Anyways, but meanwhile, the cocoon is discovered and retrieved by the Avengers and the Fantastic Four, so Jean emerges from that cocoon with no memory of the actions of the Phoenix or Dark Phoenix, which is weird. The Avengers and Fantastic Four tell her of what happened and that she was believed dead until now. She is reunited with the original X-Men and convinces them to form the new superhero team X-Factor, reusing her Marvel Girl codename. Now, X-Factor is a government-funded group of mutants, and it's the original team that was the first X-Factor, which I would like to, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe would be kind of cool if they ever get that direction. Now, the interesting thing is, the movie makes a nod towards this as well, right? So, another good nod to the comics. But anyways, Jean learns that Cyclops has romantically moved on with Madeline, who is angered over his decision to lead X-Factor and neglect his family. So, yeah, Madeline's mad. Jean is mad because of Madeline. Madeline's mad because he's gone off with X-Factor. Jean is mad because he's not with Madeline. But Jean was supposed to have been dead. And the weird thing is, Madeline is, she's a clone of Jean. It's like the exact same. She's almost the same. So it's very weird. And of course, now we're dealing with a Jean who doesn't have the memories of all the time, you know, as Phoenix, because she was around with the X-Men as Phoenix for a good long time. So there's a lot of memories of that she doesn't have. So it's very strange. But moving on, though Jean encourages Cyclops to return to Madeline, he finds their house abandoned and assumes that Madeline has left him and taken their infant son. Cyclops returns to X-Factor, and he and Jean continue their relationship. The team's adventures continued throughout the series, culminating in the line-wide Inferno crossover, which I have not gotten to read. I would like to read it. I've read most of it. I think I've checked out a library, some collections that had some of the story. But Madeline eventually resurfaces, now nearly insane and with powers awakened by a demonic pact, calling herself the Goblin Queen. And that is the Inferno. So you do get it later on. Well, I guess we'll jump to it. We'll get to it. But in some comics, I'm just going to skip ahead instead of reading through all of this. But, you know, like in the 90s, when this is when most of the comics I have of X-Men are mainly from the 90s. But they do, you know, Jean and Scott did get married. And through like this really weird time warp thing, they were sent off to the future because Cable, as a baby, had to be sent to the future because he had like he had some sort of disease, but he had to be given to somebody in the future to be able to take care of him and raise him in the future. And he grows up in a world where Apocalypse is sort of ruling the world. Scott and Jean get in a weird time warp and get an opportunity to be the ones to raise him in that world. And it's a very, very weird thing. I've got that entire series with the wedding. There's some other things that happen with the X-Men after that. There's Onslaught, which was like a weird psychic projection of all of Professor X's dark feelings or whatever, and all his power just unleashed. They made some changes to New X-Men, where, you know, Jean has died more than one time. And she comes back, but at this point of death, you know, they've got her, got Scott with the White Queen, Emma Frost, after Jean is supposed to be dead, and Jean, though, has basically said, oh no, you must be with her, because she's, with the Phoenix Force coming back around, she is now, she became some sort of like White Phoenix and has this weird cosmic role to play, which is very weird. And they even had an end song thing where she kind of came back from the dead with some other thing. I've got like one or two issues of that. I don't know all of everything that happened there. But it's weird. She goes returning to something called the White Hot Room. And before she leaves to go and be this, you know, cosmic entity, Jean and Cyclops share a telepathic emotional farewell. And that was the last we'd seen of the original Jean. But now we've got a time displaced thing going on. And I've stopped reading X-Men comics. It's gotten to like, I've lost interest. But they've tried to bring back all the younger versions of the original X-Men from the past and put them in the future, which, there's your comics timey-wimey wibbly-wobbly kind of thing. And there's all these different books, but I have not gotten myself to want to grab any of them. I'm just not interested in all the weird stuff they've done with the characters since then. I've tried to read some of it, but I don't know, something's missing. I'm sorry, I just haven't been interested. But so now we land on this film. Now, some nods to the comics. I'm pretty sure it was mentioned in the storyline, but the Debari, where the Dark Phoenix goes and consumes a star, wiping out a star system, including the planet where the Debari are. The nice thing is about this movie is they include the Debari in there. They are on Earth. And they, because the Debari, after their planet's destroyed, they become kind of a, you know, really rotten alien race. And so they pop up in the film. And that's why, you know, while you have a different focus, other than, you know, the Phoenix entity is an important focus of the film. The Debari are major players in the film, and I appreciated that. That was a nice nod to some of the backstory. You even get an appearance by Dazzler, who is a major character in the Dark Phoenix saga, even wearing some classic costume. I mean, Dazzler looked just like the way she did back in the day. So there was a lot of really great nods to the Dark Phoenix saga as it originally appeared, but they were trying to tell a different story, and I found it to be very emotional, very intense. You didn't know what was going on. You understood what Jean was going through as she's possessed by this force and she can't control it, and it's unleashing in her brain. There's been some locked up things, that there's some anger in there, and she lashes out and by accident and causes a lot of different problems, but it's about control. And I really liked the theme of where she learns to be able to find some control, and there were some lessons in it, very Elsa-like, I will say. That I really thought was really good, and I've really enjoyed a better interpretation of Cyclops. I didn't like those original X-Men films. They reinvented Cyclops and made him a character I didn't like, because they wanted to put more attention on Wolverine. But this one, they treat Cyclops respectfully. All the characters, I mean, the characters that they have in the X-Men are characters you already love as a fan. You know, you got Nightcrawler and Storm and Beast, and all of them are given their own little... It's a little side story, that sometimes it's a short side story, but each one has their own little arc of, you know, there's different ones. Each character is doing things. Each one has motivations for what they do in the film that were very genuine, very real. And I appreciated that. Every character felt like they had a good arc. Now, I've seen some people who had seen the film that are not critics that said that they felt it was too slow, but they don't rely upon the action. They rely upon the tension and the storytelling and the emotion of what's going on. And if you try to ignore all that, I guess you would be bored. But I was kind of edge of my seat. I didn't know how this was going to progress. You know, I was hoping Jean wasn't going to be our final villain, and she wasn't. But it was, I really, really enjoyed this film. I thought it was good, if not better, than Days of Future Past. And that's the last time I really, really enjoyed an X-Men film. I mean, Apocalypse was okay, but, you know, I'm usually disappointed in a lot of ways by some of these X-Men films. But I wasn't disappointed this one at all. I went in kind of like, oh gosh, I hope this isn't terrible. And I really actually enjoyed this film. I thought it was very good, and I was actually a little hopeful that as they're wrapping up this series, that maybe we're going to get some sort of end credit scene, that maybe there'd be the Thanos Nappa multiverse that's going to happen, that maybe we'd go ahead and let some of the characters spill over. But no, that doesn't happen. There's no reason to stay for an end credits. When the credits start rolling, go ahead and leave the theater. You don't have to stick around. It wraps up very nicely. You get to, the cast, I mean, James McAvoy's Professor Xavier and Michael Fassbender as Magneto have been great from the first run of this. I don't know if it's necessarily a reboot of the franchise when they did the First Class. It was sort of like a reboot, but, you know, they did tie it back to the original movies there at one point. So, but they have been great in their roles, and I've really have liked the cast, each in their roles. And each character really, I thought, got a time to shine. And I really appreciated that because I do enjoy all of these characters. So I really enjoyed the movie. So despite whatever the critics are saying, this was fun. This was enjoyable. This was emotional. I really did enjoy the film. So I recommend you go and check it out and form your own opinion. But as for me, like I said, I liked it because I'm a big fan of Cyclops and Jean. And this movie really paid a good tribute to those two characters. But that's going to wrap it up for me, so I will see you next week, and hopefully Eric will be here with us.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPCast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/NeverlandPodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Glue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Yay!
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.